It's the True Faith Podcast. I'm Alex Hurst, and we're here for you today for your full podcast for basically a celebration of Rafa Benitez in 2 years at Newcastle United. It has absolutely flown by since that Friday when he came in before the Leicester game on the Monday night, and it was announced after the defeat, disgraceful defeat to Bournemouth 5 days earlier, 6 days earlier, whatever it was, that Rafa Benitez was going to be announced Newcastle United manager, and it's been quite a journey. So we thought we'd talk about it and talk about what's been good, what's been bad, what's changed for a lot of fans, and also what we think might happen in the future. We're going to talk through some old games, some highs, lots of highs really, and one in particular Rafa Benitez means to us and what he's changed at Newcastle United for not just the fans but also the football club as a whole. With me today I have Simon Carmel and Ben Wade. Sat in the room, hopefully you'll be able to hear us quite clearly because we're using some brand new audio equipment which we've used from the Patreon subscription money, so thank you very much to everybody who has subscribed on Patreon, getting a lot of positive feedback about the extra shows, and we'll put the money straight back into things like this, further improvements to come. So Si, Ben, and on the line from London, though in different parts of London, we'll have Norman Riley and welcome to Richie Smith. So lads, you know, we'll take it all away. Si, you're on my immediate left. Just talk to the listeners for a sec about what Rafa Benitez means to you as Newcastle United manager.
It's a big question. It's a big question because I think Rafa Benitez came at a time when my love of Newcastle United was being really, really tested. There was John Carver, the first time I've cancelled my direct debit, followed by Steve McLaren, where, you know, we all kind of got behind him, but that didn't last very long at all. And it was kind of, it was getting really close to, like, lads, we might have to find something else to do on a Saturday. So Rafa Benitez has totally changed my kind of perception of Newcastle United and rejuvenated it. And I presume it's the same for loads of people. We know Norman's back coming to him nearly every game, and he's brought about a love of the football club I thought was gone forever, to be honest, because since the days of Keegan and Robson, you just never thought you'd see the day again where you go to St James's Park and you're just buzzing for every minute of the game. Everything's 10 times amplified with Rafa, so even the other week, winning 3-0 at home to Southampton to put us 13th in the league, in seasons gone by you'd be thinking, great, that's brilliant, we're 13th, we're nowhere, but it means so much under Rafa because it's what it represents, and it's kind of one step towards what we could be, whereas a 3-0 win under Pardew, which did happen under McLaren, even a John Carver win, it was just like, oh, here we go, that's him off the hook for another 2 weeks, but you never really thought it was going somewhere, whereas if we stay up the season with Rafa, every result counts, and it's leading to something, and we've just that hope and belief is there, but it hasn't been for a long time.
I'll go to Ben next, and I totally agree. Just as he has I think you're going to cough there, Ben. No. but yeah, well said, Si, and Ben, that Si's going on about how, you know, 13th in the league and 3-0 wins against a very poor Southampton side aren't necessarily something to be celebrated, maybe from the outside looking in, but when you look at the context of how the team has been undermined by the ownership, how the fact that the playing squad's probably not the best that we've ever seen, even the past 5 or 6 years, to be honest with you. What do you think it is about Rafa Benitez that seems to excite Newcastle fans so much?
He's credible, for one thing. He's actually achieved things in his career. And so, therefore, I mean, the jokes that were John Carver and McLaren, I mean, McLaren had a reputation for his best work abroad. Which, funnily enough, is obviously Rafa as well has that. But the fact of the matter is McLaren, other than his time at Man U, he's done very little, really. I mean, his brief spell years and years ago with Borough, he still had a bit of credibility from that, but that was all completely eroded because of his time at England, I think, and obviously what he did with that job. Rafa obviously won a Champions League with Liverpool, who a perennial sort of runners-up, essentially, in everything sort of since the Premier League age. So I think it's just that the fact that you know he's a winner and he's actually a football genius, if that's sort of coined the phrase, in terms of he knows what he wants out of football and he knows how to get it and how to set up the team and things like that. So he's able to hide flaws within players and teams and with his systems and things like that. And the biggest thing, I think, from that you can see with the players is that he's, and it's something that a lot of people will be aware of, he's an educator. He wants to educate the lads on and to improve them and sort of see them grow in their football sort of tacticalness, I guess, and awareness and things like that. So, I mean, so you see some of the players these days. I mean, Paul Dummett's probably the one that's very popular at the minute to be saying sort of what a difference, sort of improvement we're seeing in him. And I think that's all down to Rafa explaining exactly what he wants from him and giving him that clarity and improving his sort of outlook. And it's, as I say, it's to hide sort of weaknesses but also sort of concentrate on your strength and things like that.
So, yeah, Ben, you make a lot of good points, and I'm sure we're going to get into those as the show continues. You know, Norman, why don't you tell us a little bit about how your relationship has improved dramatically with Newcastle United since the return of Rafa Benitez to the club?
It just completely reignited my love for the club. Like, something that was dormant for a long time, and something like dormant to the point of like completely disintegrating. Obviously, you know, you've alluded to, the lads have alluded to Carver and McLaren. And like when the Carver debacle and then the announcement of McLaren, it was a case of we're done. I mean, McLaren was a completely busted flush when he was appointed. Years and years of Ashley being a problem. I was done. I wouldn't come back up for games. I might watch the occasional one, you know, at the pub. And usually that would just be if I was in the pub. I kind of wouldn't work me day around Newcastle match. In the moment that Rafa arrived, just everything changed, obviously. Because I've mentioned this a few times, he for me is a coach that I'd followed for years and one that I like kind of almost like, dreamt of being in charge of Newcastle. And as cliche as it sounds, when he was announced, it was quite literally a dream come true for me. And you know, as you know, especially the last year, I've started coming up for all the matches at home. I've been going to a lot of away matches, got involved with True Faith, and it's all down to the impact that Rafa Benitez has had on the club, but on me as a fan. It's been huge, and just a genuine pleasure to know that someone that good and that who cares that much is in charge of a club that we all obviously love.
Well said. Richie, same question for you.
Bit of a different take. For me, it's hope, but also fear as well. He's, as a manager, he's transformed the club. He's picked the club up from its arse, let's be honest. And, you know, just looking into some of his the actual statistics, he's now on a par as far as win rate with Bobby Robson, which kind of says a lot about what he's achieved in a relatively short space of time, especially a time when Newcastle, as we've all kind of alluded to, was a failing club on so many levels, a losing club, and the fact that he's, you know, his record, albeit over a shorter space of time, is now on a similar level to that of Bobby Robson, says a lot. The fear element is that, you know, window by window, season by season, Newcastle and Mike Ashley increasingly always look like they're about to shoot themselves in the foot again, and always a level of uncertainty about how much Rafa's going to put up with it. Takeovers coming through, then, you know, kind of almost being called off, and a lot of like that conversation's very cold now. You know, how does that impact the future? And it almost doesn't bear thinking about what Newcastle would be if we lose Rafa. So, for me, yeah, there's renewed hope and a very bright future ahead, but also this constant aspect that if Rafa does go, which is always a possibility, it doesn't really bear thinking about what, you know, where we could end up or how many steps backwards we could quite easily take.
Yeah, I agree. No, Richie, exactly what I said before. Like, it's everything's 10 times exaggerated with Rafa. When we had McLaren, and just after that that Bournemouth game that Dogger just mentioned, you kind of thought, if we get relegated here, am I really that bothered? But as soon as Rafa Benitez is in charge of Newcastle United, relegation's terrifying. The thought of losing him's terrifying. The thought of the future we could have versus the future that Mike Ashley might give with is terrifying when you know you're so close to having something really special. Whereas before Rafa Benitez came, you couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. You couldn't see anything positive to come from Mike Ashley's reign. But with Rafa there, there's so much more riding on every game. And I think, as I said before, beating Southampton at home means so much more because we've got them and because of that fear of if we don't win these games and if we do get relegated and lose them, it's that what could have been, which wasn't there before.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just think there's a lot of people, a lot of fans, probably everyone on this podcast possibly saying things might never get better than having Rafa Benitez in charge of the football club. You know, he's only Benitez, even if he was to stay at Newcastle for some time, there's only going to be there's a window of opportunity in Newcastle right now of, let's say, the next 3 or 4 years, maybe beyond that, where there's a genuine opportunity of winning something. These opportunities aren't going to come along very often. It is kind of once in a fan's lifetime in many respects, having this kind of a bloke in charge of your club, which just, as you say, just amplifies the fear of not having him, of not taking advantage of that opportunity, and it just shows how huge he is and how huge he will continue to be.
Yeah, well said. We're sat here now on what, the 18th of March 2018. I think we all know, everyone sat here, and hopefully everyone listening will agree, that if we were sat here in 2 years' time with Rafa Benitez still in charge of the club, particularly with a takeover having happened, but even without the fact that he might be here or sign another contract under this regime, means that there is a serious chance of, as Rich alludes to, competing at the right end of the table finally, or winning some silverware, or at least seriously competing for silverware, because it's been so long since we've even had a go, to be honest with you. So that's the exciting thing about the future, but there's also that fear, and you also just have to realise how unbelievably lucky Mike Ashley, Lee Charnley, whoever you want to say, are to have Rafa Benitez. If we look at the decisions they've made consistently since taking over the football club, even if you go back to 2009, which a few fans last year before won the league in, let's be honest, hilarious circumstances last season, the league win. Some fans tried to use the 09-10 team as a stick to beat that side and to beat Rafa with, even though football has changed, finances have changed, the second tier has changed, all of that kind of stuff, which we went into last season. However, that season was started without a manager. They were so disorganised, so without direction or hope, trying to sell the club again in 2009, that they just gave it to one of the coaches and hoped it would be all right, and it was better than all right. Chris did a great job and is a good manager, as we're seeing now. But that's the kind of thing you fear. And I know some journalists have kind of said that to us as well, that if they feel that the club are now, you know, committed to the good, strong manager, world-class manager, Roach, why the fuck weren't they committed to that before? Why did they appoint Steve McClaren? Why was John Carver, given, you know, control of a Premier League football club, when everyone watching and everyone listening to this and us at the time, we knew what was coming? And that's the fear. No one wants to go back to that. But we want to be positive. And I think looking through the tweets, and lots of people did send tweets into us, it's more than just the kind of the football side of things as well. This is one of the things with Rafa Lee Johnson, says he's engaged with the community, clearly getting what the club means to the city, united the fan base from day one, and that's a key word, united. The club's PR and marketing department have also followed that one in. But you know, dignity, these are words that describe a brilliant man, not just a brilliant manager. Faith in the team and the manager, when he speaks you can believe him. I think that's a good thing. Trust and appreciation, they're such basic things. They're the kind of things which most football fans probably don't have to worry about. Like, you know, when, I don't know, pick a manager, I don't know, when Claude Puel speaks at Leicester, the fans probably believe that he's telling the truth, not trying to keep his owner happy or not trying to placate a difficult person above him. And that's a massive thing. I mean, Ben, let's go back to the start of his reign. Relegation on his watch. He took a team over that was 19th in the league. We finished 18th. Do you think, you know, looking back then, was there any blame to be attached with him, or was it simply, you know, the impossible job keeping that shower up?
The damage had been done, hadn't it? I mean, give a bloke 10 games. I mean, we had hope. We had a lot of hope going into sort of the Leicester game. I mean, I remember we all went down for that game and we're in great spirits because we thought, oh yes, we've got a credible manager now. We've got someone that we can trust that's going to get something out of the players that we've got. Because I mean, we didn't have a terrible side at the time, and we had some good players that were just not being used properly. And yes, the performances improved, and we only just went down. I mean, let's be honest, other teams probably didn't do us any hands. I mean, the Everton Sunderland game obviously springs to mind when you just that sort of performance by Everton that night. I mean, obviously it ended up with Martinez losing his job, but that was just a team that did not care. So a little bit out of our hands, but it came down to that Villa game, really. I mean, I think obviously the podcast, all the lads were there for that game, and the chances we missed. I mean, we dominated that Villa team. We could have won 3 or 4. It was just a case of we just had to get that first one, and we'll probably win that game comfortably. And I think that would have changed the whole outlook. But at the same time, I think he did his best, and I think he got the maximum out of that team that he could do. And I don't think any sort of blame should be put at his feet. He did the best that he could to try and get out of that situation, and unfortunately didn't manage it. What did happen after that, though, I think that similarly happened in 2009-10, was that sort of cathartic reaction where we were able to sort of basically start the rebuild and get rid of the players that weren't interested in being here, and get players that actually want to play for Newcastle United. And that's the biggest thing I think that's come out of this, with a manager like Rafa at the helm, who's given us some direction. He's got a clear objective in his mind of what he wants to achieve with the club, and he's obviously, you can see that the players know what he wants, and that clarity and that sort of thought process that's in the team now, I think you can see is why we're doing so well and why things are looking up.
Yeah, I mean, Richie, if I come to you, these things are all great, and we've talked about them a lot on the podcast, like dignity, respect, hope, all this kind of stuff. But there are actual key football things that a guy like Rafa Benitez, in terms of his success, have made. What are the biggest kind of off the pitch things he's changed at the football club in a football sense that have impressed you most, Richie, and you think are the most important?
Two that spring to mind for me. First one, injuries. I know, Alex, you were quite passionate about this as well. Newcastle for years and years before Rafa took over had this just perennial injury problem where for large parts of the season we just have, you know, when you look at the physio room kind of injury league table, Newcastle would always be at the top of that table. Consistently have key players out injured and not just picking up, you know, little 1 week knocks, but out for 4, 5, 6 weeks at a time, and that massively helped, massively hurt us. Rafa Benitez has completely and utterly transformed that aspect of our club. We do get injuries, obviously, but to the level that we had, it's chalk and cheese. You know, we've consistently got a more or less a fit squad, bearing maybe one player might be out that would be in the start 11 for a short period of time, but they get players back quicker. It's much better managed as well, as far as how they bring players back. I think that's been a huge contributing factor to how well we've done under Rafa Benitez, is that we've got rid of this ridiculous old age injury problem that we used to have, to the point that now it's rarely a match that you're kind of wondering, like, when's this player going to be back fit, because it's quite often is the case, they're actually, you know, fit and either playing or on the bench. The second one is defensively. I mean, for as long as I've lived, Newcastle have always been pretty shit defending. We've never really had like a defence that you could be proud of. That's all changed under Benitez. And when you consider the actual profile of the players that we've got on defence, shows you again how remarkable a job he has done of actually making, you know, developing these players, the likes of Lascelles, the likes of Paul Dummett. They've become better defenders, better footballers under Rafa Benitez, to the point that, you know, we are proud as fans of having of our defence. It's very rare that we actually criticise the defence or we lose points because of our defensive frailties. I think that's massive. For the first time in my life, I can confidently say that I'm actually quite proud of Newcastle having a decent defence.
Yeah, well said. And I think the improvement of, look at the likes of Paul Dummett and Jamal Lascelles, but even someone like DeAndre Yedlin, their improvement defensively is just off the scale. And we've said it before, and it's been well publicised in the media, that Rafa Benitez gets players, and then you can, in most cases, expect those players to considerably improve at the time at the club, where that possibly wasn't the case in the past, where they got players who were only ever going to stay at the same level, or actually quite often get worse. And that's got to be, that's not just Rafa, that's the coaching staff as well, but you're absolutely spot on about the injuries too. I mean, the difference now, we still do get some injuries, but the difference now is we tend to see them happen on the pitch. Under McLaren, under Pardew and Carver, a lot of the injuries were picked up in training, so that suggests that things have been changed massively in that respect. And a lot of the injuries were just kind of mystery injuries, like Richie says, like players would just go missing for months and months on end. There was no communication. Now Rafa in press conferences or even straight after games are saying, right, John Joe, he's had a scan. We hope it's okay. It could be 6 weeks, if not. It's that kind of clarity in that. I mean, it doesn't really make any sense that before there wasn't any clarity, before they tried to keep things under wraps. I mean, that kind of suspicion of the fan base and the media has almost disappeared from the people running the club, or certainly at the day-to-day level. I presume Ashley and those kind of people are still very suspicious of the people that, or the fan base. But, Si, if you could pick some players, you know, that Rafa's had in his time here, who have you been most impressed by in terms of their improvement and what he's done with?
Well, it has to start with Moussa Sissoko, of course, whose 10 games under Rafa in that relegation season were a revelation. Obviously, we never doubted the lad, but the improvement from him when he just seemed to be put in the position he needed to be played in, and just like he very nearly kept us up single-handedly because we had very little quality left in the side at the time, and he was class. You obviously look at Paul Dummett, who we'd all completely written off in the relegation season as, you know, why we're still playing without a left-back. Now I couldn't think of anyone else who I'd like to see playing left-back at the minute for it. You've got Mo Diarmi. Well, you know, last season he wasn't even a standout player in the Championship. He did a good job, but his turnaround this season has been incredible. Lascelles, I mean, it's hard to think of a player who hasn't improved in this squad we've got now. There's no one who's gone backwards under Rafa, whereas for years and years we've watched class players just get worse and worse under Pardew, Carver. You know, you can go back as far as Souness, Allardyce. They don't improve players. Like, all the players for Newcastle just got worse and worse, but under Rafa, like, everyone on the team is just improving, and they're learning new things and they're adding more to the game, and it's just fantastic watching players who we may not think are brilliant, but they're trying their hardest and they're getting better every week.
Yeah, well said. Mo Diarmi as well is, you know, definitely worth a mention. But, you know, the fact that, you know, even talk about Diarmi, which of course I'm going to, he was brought in as a number 10. He was brought in and it didn't really work. I mean, he had some excellent games last season, also some indifferent ones, and it definitely didn't work this season. I mean, Perez has clearly identified himself as the number one, number 10. Well, that's a silly way of saying
which
it.
One?
Yeah, Perez and goal wouldn't work. But the fact that you could kind of see towards the back end of last season, Rafa started moving more back into centre midfield. I think Chef went away, Ben, when me and you were there. Diarmi and Shelby played together and just weren't very good.
Yeah.
And to come from that to what we see at the minute, again, is just absolute testament to the man we've got in charge of the club. You know, there's so many comments come in on Twitter saying, you know, Bedford, Mark, my only comment is I'm simply thankful that we have Rafa as our manager. I pinch myself every time I see a game and he's there on the touchline. And it's still very much the case. You know, Chris, what's his structure, professionalism and hope? There's that word hope again. Johnny Cross says, might sound stupid, but as a Mag living here in Spain, it feels like he's given us some relevance again. My Spanish in-laws always ask how he's doing because of the man himself. Stephen Ord, if nothing else, making it credible to say you back your manager and the lads, and you know they want the best for the team and the city and the fans, not the balance sheet. That's a special thing. Totally agree. So, Norman, I'll come to you, and you started coming back to the match probably, what, back end of last season?
That's right.
And you've said, you know, consistently on the podcast that you have an affinity towards this side that maybe that you've never had before. Why do you think that is? Do you think Rafa's selection of players, in terms of players that he brings into the club, is more than just to do with ability? In terms of, do you think he looks at the type of, I don't know, person as much as the player, which allows us as fans to have this affinity with him?
100%. He's obviously had, comparatively with other Premier League clubs, very little money to spend. And one of the things that I really like about him is just the absolute trust that you have that he's going to, whatever he's got, however little it may be, however much it may be, he's going to, every signing he makes is going to be vetted, and the personality is going to be assessed as to whether or not they'll fit into the squad. And like you say, he could be offered, you know, he could be scouting two or three players who are excellent footballers, but if their personality's not right, then I doubt you would sign them, because there's a clear aim to get a squad of people together who genuinely like each other. I mean, just little things. I think there was a photo put up on Twitter the other day of all of them in this little kind of basement restaurant in Spain, and it just kind of looked like an enjoyable scene. And I think that togetherness that he's ensured through being so careful and through just managing personality so well has helped massively this season, because we all know that in terms of raw ability, the squad, you know, it is towards the low end of the table. A lot of the lads are the ones who came up from the Championship with the club, and what he's got out of them is he's got these kind of superhuman performances from people who genuinely want to be there, and that's what he's engendered. He's created that through his backroom staff, and he's just given us a team and a squad that I absolutely love, and I feel a kind of an affinity with that I can't recall having, and it's a real joy to watch. Even the little things, like, you know, we don't play this kind of free-flowing, gung-ho football. Rafa's like a very cerebral manager who plays incredibly tactically, and all of it's a joy. Even seeing some of our kind of most, you know, defensive performances where we have very little possession but we're still so effective, I really enjoy it. And the players that he gets, even like the players that he brings in, maybe they're not his first choice, his second choice, even his third choice, but you still know that even if the player's his fourth choice, the homework's already been done. I can imagine that he says, like, right, I need to sign a centre forward this summer. He's probably got a list of like 15 forwards, you know. So even like the 10th or 11th choice would be someone who's been vetted properly, and it's just that kind of meticulous preparation and care that I absolutely love. I really love the squad, and I've got no doubt that we're going to stay up and be better for it.
I think Norman, just to jump in there, just what you were saying about, on the face of it, the football isn't, you know, like the most glamorous to watch by any means, but it depends on how you look at it. You know, like Southampton last week, you know, we had something like 30% of the possession at home, but, you know, the fact is the goals that were scored, you know, kind of massively stood out, and yeah, the defensive solidarity that you talked about, just that kind of being able to just close Southampton down to just nothingness, was actually brilliant to watch. I'm sure, like, you'll get, you know, some fans who might not necessarily kind of appreciate that side of it, of, you know, being a more cautious side to play, being more difficult to beat. But this is why Newcastle for so many years weren't that great, because we were easy to beat, because we weren't good defensively. So he's I'm totally on board with what you're saying there. Is that totally depends on what way you look at it, but if you can start to appreciate his tactics and how he gets the absolute most out of every single one of those players, as limited as some of them might be, because he knows that's what it takes to actually start to get points and win games, then so be it.
I think as well, just to come back to sort of what Norman was talking about the effort that Rafa puts in to sort of maximise everything. I mean, we know from sort of what the great man has said himself, he puts so much, he's a football addict, he puts so much time and effort and thought into everything he does, and you're right to say there, Norm, that he's meticulous. He probably has a list of, like, he probably has a database of, like, every player available in the world, like, even 10-year-olds, he's probably, like, scouting, like, for like, 10 years' time or whatever. Like, he just goes into so much effort to scout players, and obviously he's really keen to sort of get as much value as he can out of every opportunity. But also it's just the fact that he puts so much effort and he's got so much passion for the game. It reflects on the club and the fan base and everything. I mean, when we were younger, it was like you basically eat, sleep, breathe Newcastle United. Everything was all about the football, and it's nice to have a manager like that again that you trust is like us. He's one of us. I mean, the likes of McLaren, you'd never really had that affinity with him to think like, oh yeah, he's like one of us. He was a stranger, the same. I mean, Carver, okay, he's a Geordie, but again, you never really felt like he was giving his everything and putting everything in and was making sacrifices for the club. You get the impression that Rafa, I mean, what was it about the little anecdote he told us about where he was at home with his wife and he was making little formations with the salt and pepper and stuff, and just and his wife was like, go on, get yourself away, go and do your football, you're not there. You just don't get the sort of feeling that anybody else that's been in the club since Sir Bobby really would have put in that much time and have that much care and sort of a passion for the club, and it's just great to have somebody like that back.
Absolutely, well said, lads. You know, Liam Bushby and David Farrell Banks have both made really good points that he has put. Well, Liam Bushby says he's single-handedly put an end to the mass hysteria hitting NUFC every single season. Spurs in the final day at home was possibly the greatest moment in NUFC's recent history because it was a completely united club. When he decided to show to stay, he showed who he is and what NUFC could be, and that's really well said. And then David made a really good point and said that if you look at the relegation rivals, managers that we've got, you know, look through them and kind of you're immediately aware of, you know, how lucky we are. You know, West Brom have got Pardew, Stoke have got Lambert, Southampton have no one or Mark Hughes now.
They've all had two managers as well this season.
and where the antithesis of that now, that we're the reasonably stable club in terms of a football perspective, still not stable off the pitch, but it's like, compare and contrast is now we have gone to Spain and we're currently playing as we're recording Royal Antwerp in a three thirds, 45 minutes each. I don't know what the final score was. It was 1-0 Newcastle after 90 minutes, but the lads have gone, you know, the journalists are there, very open, you know, a lot of positivity, like Norman alluded to, you know, social stuff going on between the players, no alcohol though. Compare that to when Steve McLaren took his side away, Fabrizio Colaccini never kicked a ball again for Newcastle, and it was just a farce, and then we came back and we lost two games on the bounce, and then McLaren was sacked. So the whole club is just in such a different place because of him and what he's done, and as Ben alludes to quite correctly, his work off the pitch and his work rate and making sure that these lads that we have in this football club has the best possible chance of success is different, because before you had managers who would make excuses for Mike Ashley's lack of investment or the club's lack, or not even investment, but the club's lack of ability to invest in itself, because they needed to keep him happy. All Rafa Benitez wants to do is keep the fans happy and keep the club as high as he possibly can up the table, and I think that's definitely going to happen the majority of time that he remains here. But there have been some downs as well. I think it's an important point to say that Rafa Benitez has been presented with problems in a football sense that he's had to overcome. You look at the start of last season, two really unexpected defeats against Fulham and Huddersfield, who again ended up being two of the best teams in the division, but it didn't feel like that at the time, and even so, you wouldn't expect to take 0 points out of those games. Relegation for a start, his first four or five games we didn't win a game. It would have been easy to, you know, do a bit of a Paul Lambert. I think Paul Lambert's taken 7 points from his 8 games at Stoke, which is, you know, Norman will be delighted with that, because he called it. But it's easy to throw in the towel, and I think you look at Stoke now, I think Stoke have thrown in the towel a little bit, players getting sent off. In fact, fuck Stoke, look at Sunderland. Let's talk about them. Let's talk about Rafa Benitez, and, you know, it's kind of this, like, reverse psychology. They knew, even though we'd gone down, when he stayed with us, the reason they took the piss out of Rafa so much is because they knew, whether they wanted to admit it to themselves or not, they knew that Newcastle United would be back bigger and stronger, and they would possibly go in the other direction. You look at Chris Coleman now in Sunderland, 6 red cards since Coleman's come in. 6. It's a fucking disgrace. Should be sacked for that.
What's his what's his managerial record? Because, you know, Moyes was awful for them apparently. Grayson had to go. Like, what's Coleman's record standing up like?
I think it's as bad as Grayson's, but the thing which cracks me up about the Magnums is, in this loving of Coleman, is that he has nothing in his domestic career to back up any kind of loyalty. He's had a really average managerial record. He did a decent job with Wales, but again, didn't get them, what, third in a poor group this time. But a lot of Sunderland fans were saying that Grayson was poor because the squad was capable of so much more, and now they're all saying that Coleman's been dealt with an impossible hand. Well, they can't both be true. But anyway, if you look at that club and you look at where they are, and people say that could be Newcastle, I don't think Newcastle fans would walk away from the club as quickly and as regularly as they have. But there's definitely a sense there of every one of the players, the manager, they've all just given up. Last season, Moyes, the fans, they gave up. That didn't happen with Rafa Benitez at Newcastle, even when it was looking pretty grim. You know, Richie, we were there together at Norwich away. There was still hope and there was still fight, when it would have been much easier to throw the towel in and just blame, you know, the likes of, well, whatever players you want to blame, or not having a fit left back at the club when he joined, all these kind of issues, having to play Lascelles from nowhere. And he came and he fought and we turned it round, and, you know, we were 5 unbeaten at the end of the season. I think you'd do well to find any team that's been relegated in recent history that's been relegated in such good form. And that's testament to him and obviously what we saw last season. But yeah, even this season with the horrible autumn that we had, some fans criticising him, tactics, Mitrovic, the rest of it. And again, he just doesn't let things like that bother him. And this is a genuine world-class manager that we now have at our disposal. And I want to talk through some of the highs, Si. I mean, Si, you want to pick a game for me that in Rafa Benitez's era as manager that just kind of is encapsulated what, like, his side or kind of what he's meant to you?
There's actually been loads, hasn't there? You think back, and it's been a hell of a slog this season, and even last season, 46 games in the Championship was a hell of a slog. But the one game that I was just looking back through the results of last season, the one game that stands out for me was on a Tuesday night in October, the League Cup third or fourth round against Preston. We smashed them 6-0, and there was 50,000 people there. Imagine that, 50,000 turned up for a League Cup game at St James's on a weeknight, and we put on a hell of a show. Mo Diarmi scored twice, which was class. But that's what Rafa Benitez does. Like, The whole fan base had given up on the idea of the Cups under the previous three or four managers, but everyone was there because it was Rafa. Obviously, we're doing really well in the league. I think we're top by that point, or if not, we're very close. And it's just that kind of, you know, that Rafa is a winner, and he wants, even though we're in the second division, he wanted to win matches in any competition. So people turned up knowing that would put in a proper performance in the Cup. And that kind of sums up Rafa Benitez's time here, like a 6-0 win in the League Cup. We could have gone 2-0 up, subbed off all the good players and kind of seen out the game. But no, he wanted the players to express themselves. He wanted us to put on a show for 50,000 people who showed up. That's Rafa Benitez at Newcastle United.
Ben, same question.
Yeah, just to pick up on that point as well, I think, was that the game when they were fighting over who was taking the penalty? And you're completely right. I mean, that the game that followed that, I think, was that the whole after that, I think. I mean, the cup game in that, we went into that game expecting to win that and probably should have given a better account of ourselves. But that was a Championship team going to a Premier League team at the time, expecting to win, and that's what Rafa did. He gave us that hope. I think the one that I'll always remember will be that Norwich game. Just to dominate that game as much as we did in 45 minutes, and it was sort of one of our issues last year was that we kept conceding goals at half time. Just before half time, we did it a number of times, and that was one of the issues, and Rafa knew it was, and it was one of those things that it put us on the back foot in quite a few games, and was one of the issues that he managed to overcome and he sorted out eventually towards the back end of the season. But that sort of conceding at half time in a game that we battered them in, and we should have been 3 or 4. I mean, Dwight Gehlert had a goal disallowed, he obviously did get one, and we were in so much control, and then it just flipped on us, and we found ourselves down 3-1 15 minutes into the second half, and there's plenty Newcastle sides in the past that would have wilted and would have lost that game 5, possibly more. But we kept fighting. Gouffran, of all people, gets one back. and then Dwight Gale steals the show at the end there. But it's just that game just encapsulated everything about Newcastle, that we found a way. We had our struggles, and he was able to overcome them, and the players fought till the end, and they never gave up, and there was just that effort for 90 minutes plus that we haven't always seen. But that was Rafa to a T. That sort of just encapsulates his sort of persona almost on the pitch.
Richie, I have a feeling I know what yours is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, the Brighton match was an absolute joy, like just for the, I guess, what it meant as far as the league and you know, how we came back in that game, and just a brilliant night to be there. I mean, aside from that game, which is definitely stands out for me, is Huddersfield away in the Championship, I think. When we talk about about Rafa's kind of tactical class, I think was really shown in that fixture, because you know Huddersfield were very kind of like a bit of a unique team in the Championship, in that they were very attacking, very relentless, but again, they're obviously one of our kind of competitors pushing for automatic promotion in the league. And the fact that in that game they huffed and puffed, but basically Newcastle were just far more clinical from, I think it was Murphy got the second, didn't he, in that game, and then obviously Gale right at the end got put through, and that was the one where he was kind of telling the Huddersfield fans to calm down, I think, was when he was when he was celebrating. But that fixture again just showed like Huddersfield, Wagner getting absolutely bummed by everyone in the media, and you know what a brilliant, like, this is like the, you know, Klopp's prodigy and all this stuff, and then Rafa just completely and utterly just taught him a lesson in tactics and strategy in that fixture. So for me, that kind of stood out as just a game that potentially was a big banana skin for us, but really, you know, turned out like we'd be beating 3-1 away. And the reality is that Rafa still does not get the level of credit that he deserves, and that's unfortunate. But I'd say those two games probably particularly stand out for me.
Nice one. And Norman, yourself?
I would have definitely said Huddersfield and Brighton for the obvious reasons that Richie stated, but to add to that, couple of standout moments. The Leeds away, that game against Leeds away, when the, you know, the kind of Sky Sports Championship squad of pundits couldn't wait for Monk to get one over on Benitez. You know, it was like their biggest game in years. Top tier of the stand open. Monk's like this bright new thing. He's he's doing an incredible job at Leeds, and just people. It was like a genuine. It felt like there's a genuine desire for people wanting us to see us lose to Gary Monk's Leeds United, and Rafa just absolutely just masterclassed them. He did. Monk's career, to a certain extent, it's just like it's almost like it's gone downhill from that game. He was built up so much, and Rafa just obliterated him with the most perfect tactical display away in a high pressure game in a stadium that was really up for it. And it was almost like swatting like a little child away. You know what I mean? He was crying in your face.
I like the use of swatting there, because that's exactly what Rob Green did.
Oh, well, there you go. It was perfect. And the other one, I would say. Is it as weird as this might be? Burning away, just because. It's like, when we got, you know, enjoy burning away, all of that. And, you know, the way I look at that is I just think, Burton Albion, right, 7 years ago, whatever it was, we're playing in the conference, and in that little 6,000 capacity stadium, like, Rafa Benitez is there, on the touchline, guiding his team to a victory. It was just a really lovely moment. It was like, we are burning away, and we are enjoying it. And Rafa Benitez is war manager on the touchline of Burton away. So aye, there you go.
What happened to that fixture again, Norm? I know that something happened, didn't it? Then Richie obviously scored the winner, I think. Was that game where we won 1-0?
That was a home game where we won 1-0 when the penalty got raped, got disallowed.
That was it. That's what I was thinking of.
The away game that stood. I mean, that was obviously a huge game, and Richie took it by the kind of scruff of its neck. He was magnificent in that game, but it was a kind of really big win as well. But yeah, the Burnley win, obviously Alex, me and you at Cardiff away, that was just a spectacular day of celebration, wasn't it?
We've still got about 40 games to go through, I think.
Do you want to get through all of them, Norman?
Can we get through all of them?
Well said. I'll do a Norman, I'll pick two. First of all, West Ham at home this year was like... Come on, lads, give us it. West Ham at home this year was just... And Richie pointed out the Brighton and Huddersfield games before. This is a nervous fan base. Newcastle United's fan base is nervous and often pessimistic and often fears the worst. So we're drawn with Bristol City 2-2, come back from 2-0 down. And it was all right. Newcastle were all right. Two calamitous goals to concede early doors between Dummett and Darlow. Yedlin, I think, as well, was at fault for the first one. And we played well enough. We could have snatched it. I think Mitrovic and Shelby had chances to win 3-2. It happens in the Championship. But the reaction on social media was... You know, we're going to go and get beat by Brighton and beat by Huddersfield, and we're going to be 8 points behind these and 5 points, and they're going to do this. And no, we'll beat them. And you can see that in the approach of the Southampton game just gone and the approach of the Huddersfield game, that he's slowly changing minds and changing perceptions of the team. And we've said it regularly on the podcast, the one thing you can rely on Newcastle United and Rafa Benitez and Newcastle United too is not lose the big games. Do it when it really matters. Yeah, there's been disappointing defeats this season, particularly away at Huddersfield and Brighton, but there weren't massive games in terms of context then. Newcastle going to Palace and getting out with a draw and beating Man United at home, that was a big game when the relegation zone, and we'll just do it when it matters. But I look at that West Ham game this season, and that was a massive game because we'd just lost the opening two fixtures of the season. We hadn't scored a goal. We'd been beaten by Forest. The transfer window was a disaster. Jonjo Shelvey was suspended for 3 games. Dwight Gayle had no form and was injured, and there was just so much negativity. I remember driving up that day for that game with you lads. We've been to the cricket in Leeds, seeing England lose to the West Indies, and we're driving back and we were all very pessimistic. And I think we're kind of an optimistic group. I mean, West Ham are rubbish as well, but they put in a better show than Southampton the previous week, and It was kind of that ability Rafa has just to completely forget about what had gone on, prepare the team for the game and win a game 3-0. That was very, really, again, like the Southampton game, very flattering on our opponents there. And that's just Rafa for me, regardless of what setbacks he's got to put up with or how badly things have gone the previous week. You can always be sure that going into the next game, we're actually here, we're in with a chance. And that is the antithesis of some of the other managers in the league we've got now who get into these runs and spiral out of control. And they're so, you look at bad managers, and I think bad managers are so reliant on confidence. And yeah, so are we. Every football team is, but we can pull results out of nowhere, and that's why we'll not go down, in my opinion, because we're capable of pulling results out. West Ham away is another one. Stoke away is another one. The performance against Brighton before Stoke was pathetic, really. I mean, defensively it was better, but it was a really, really poor home performance. I don't think anyone's going to deny that. And then we'll go to Stoke and put in that performance. And that's one of my favourite things about Benitez is the team are just prepared for each game. And the team and the players don't let negatives affect them too much in terms of what they know what they've got to do. And it takes it back to what Ben said at the start of the show about the team being set up right. It's not just a cliche. The team are set up right. And if just because you lose a game and you make a mistake, look at DeAndre Yedlin's form recently. Rafa could have... I was shocked. Shocked when Rafa started DeAndre Yedlin at West Brom, and he did make a mistake again, which led to the goal. But you can tell that Rafa's like, right, this player's going through a bad spell. Doesn't mean he's shit. Doesn't mean he's not good enough. It just means that he has to improve and we'll have to put it right next game. And that's a total different attitude, I think, compared to previous managers at the club.
I think it doesn't allow the players to get too high on the highs. I mean, we could have easily had a disaster after the Man U game. That day was unbelievable. The fan base was up a height. The players, you could see the delight in them, and we could have easily just sort of been living off that up to now, basically. But it went, we were allowed to celebrate, and then it was like, right, we've got a job to do again. And you're spot on there in terms of that. Each game by game, we're not, as you say, we're not like relying on momentum to to sort of get a few wins together and string them together, we can quite easily lose a game. You know we're going to be prepared and we're going to want to win it even more so. But equally, when we have won a game, we're not patting ourselves on the back. We're back to work and making sure that we prepare ourselves properly and put in a good show in the next week. And that's the key, is that the preparation that goes into every game. Like Rafa doesn't allow the players to sort of rest on what they did, how good were you last game. It's not, we start again, we go again, and you've got to do it all again this week.
I mean, yeah, that thing about sometimes we'll lose a game and you get a very small minority of our fan base that will criticise or question the manager's tactics. But I think the difference is from 99% of us and from almost all rational thinkers, he does have our trust, and yeah, we can accept it. And he'll say himself that he will make the odd mistake, and something he tries doesn't come off. And especially when in a season where we have got a team that needs to almost overachieve to survive, it's just that thing of I've never trusted a manager more in my life. And you know, we've had Robson, we've had Keegan. I've never once thought, oh, you know what? I don't really know what Rafa was doing there. I don't know why we've lost that game. Whereas, you know, in years gone by, pretty much since Ashley's took over, especially, but there was always a fair reason to question what had happened or what we'd seen after a defeat. But with Rafa, you can always find a way to think, well, you know what, I kind of understand what happened then, we got a bit unlucky, or the ref's fucked with. You just trust them for everything. I mean, the fact that they're away now in Spain doing this friendly, it's not like, you know, with Alan Pardew, you've got players going out nicking taxis and stuff, that wouldn't be going on. You trust Rafa that this team is going to benefit from this trip away. There's no gags. There's a reason to do it, and you trust him with it. Whereas if John Carver's going away, you probably think he's not even going to take the players with him. He's just going to go and play golf by himself and leave Beardsley to do the training. Rafa, you trust him. He'd be working hard the whole.
John Carver, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Well said. Norman, over to you.
We've kind of alluded to it, you know, with regards to how meticulous he is and how he keeps players grounded. You've probably all noticed that when we score, I mean, I think I even saw it against Southampton, when we score, his kind of reaction isn't, you know, to go, like, ballistic. You know, like when they say, like, Huddersfield score, Wagner just goes, he just does his nut, like, going mad. And he is so composed, and the first thing he does, when we score, he'll go and get a player close to him and give him instructions, either for that player to pass on. Every single minute of every game is analysed in fine detail, and that ties in to the fact as well that what he's got is he's got a backroom staff that not only does he trust, they're not like, it's not like just jobs for the boys, these are people that he trusts and who are absolutely brilliant tactical coaches. They're like, they're at the top level in the field, that level in the field as coaches. And what they've done is they've clearly educated the players. The players have become, in my opinion, more intelligent the longer that they spent with Rafa and that coaching staff. And it's just these little things that we haven't had for years. You know, as we say, Pardew and his backroom staff, absolute joke. McLaren and his backroom staff, same thing. We've got, like, genuinely intelligent, brilliant tactical brains in the whole of the backroom staff and with Rafa. And it's just so obvious to see how positively that's impacting on the club, and long may it continue.
Yeah. I just think the final point is looking at the players that he's brought in. Yes, of course, they haven't all worked out, especially last season with the huge transformation he had to make in the team. You know, and the number of signings he did make, not everyone is going to work out. But if you actually look at the players that he has signed and, like, what they've contributed and, like, what, you know, what they've offered to the team, and he's done that with just such a tiny budget in the grand scheme of things. And you just think, what could he do if he was able to spend £20 million on a player, £30 million on a player? Like, what could the team look like if he had, like, that caliber of player in his side? Yeah, and it does make you think, like, you know, the sky's the limit. It really is, and that you can. That might sound eccentric, but it's when you actually realise what he's doing with the players he's got, with the backing of, like, you know, the backing of a with Premier League TV money, which, let's be honest, that's what we're all hoping for to stay up this season is that windfall that you get and that getting invested back in the squad. You know, it really is. It makes you realise what is possible, because he's shown what he can do you know, signing players for £5-6 million, £2 million, and what he can get out of those, that caliber of individual. But as I say, it's all good and well as kind of saying that. Just whether that happens in practice, he gets that money is another thing. But yeah, that's the thing that really gives me the hope that what he could achieve with the right back and behind him.
Nice one, lads. Thanks very much. We'll leave it there for today. Enjoyable little chat that for about an hour. Obviously, there's fucking ages until Newcastle play again. So this time next week, we'll release our 45 minutes to an hour we had with commentary legend Mick Lowes. I'd recommend everyone listens into that. Mick was absolutely fantastic to be with. We'll get that out this time next week. And thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back with you soon.